you, team, for your song right before the message today. Debbie, that was obvious. That came from a place down deep. I invite you to take out your outline that's in the bulletin this morning. And if you're watching online, you can access the outline that everybody has here in the room by opening up your chat and clicking on the link, and hopefully you can access the outline. And if you can't, just get a piece of paper. And in the message, when we talk about these points, I hope you'll write them down, and I'll explain more about that in a minute and what we hope you will do with these. We're concluding today our series in the month of June called Thresholds. And we've been looking each Sunday at different stories of biblical characters crossing an important threshold that led to the enlarging of their spiritual threshold. So there's been that sort of double meaning as we've considered each of these stories. We began the first week with the friends of Daniel who went through that threshold into the fiery furnace. And we talked about how God often meets us in furnaces. We might say, God, keep me out of the fire, and God's waiting to meet us in the fire. I got an email that week from one of the leaders of our church who said I had no way of knowing after last Sunday in that sermon that I'd be going into a big fire at work. And my temptation was just to say, oh, God, why did you let this happen? Keep me out of this. He said, but I changed my thinking about it. I thought, you know, I'm going to trust God will meet me in it. He says, and it turns out that because I was willing to face that and get in it, that it really felt like God showed up and something good came out of it. The second week, we talked about the woman Phoebe who crossed the threshold of a boat and went to Rome and carried Paul's letter to the Romans, and talked about how God calls us to cross thresholds of prejudice, particularly people who tell us what we are and are not capable of doing. And then last week, Pastor Javon just lit it up, didn't he? He talked about, okay, that's enough. That's enough. Pastor Javon got enough from you last Sunday, I could tell. He did. He lit it up. He talked about that great story from the book of Acts where Peter crosses the threshold of Cornelius's home and goes into a non-Jewish home. He would have never done that in his life. That was forbidden. And Javon talked about the call of the church today to cross racial barriers and thresholds in our world and what it means to be the church that does that. So today, we wrap up thinking about this whole idea of doors. That's been the symbol for this series, thresholds, doorways God opens before us. We look at this verse from the book of Revelation. See, I have set before you an open door which no one can shut. This is God's promise to us. And that image of an open door, it's an important metaphor. An open door says there's more to be experienced in life. There's opportunity ahead. Things can be different. But as that song implied a moment ago, every opportunity has some challenge to it. It has some risk. There's no guarantee when you go through a door exactly how things are going to turn out. So it can be risky when you go through doors. Yet when we do, we often discover things we wouldn't have otherwise. Do you remember going to school for the first time as a child? You were probably apprehensive and nervous, but you went through that door and you discovered this whole world of learning and friendships. And hopefully, you discovered that with changes after that, when you went to a new school, maybe when you moved to a new neighborhood, maybe one day when you graduated from high school, you went to your first job, you went to college. More doors of opportunity, more things to be discovered. When you got married, when you had children. One thing every one of us here has in common is that we will all go through the same door together. Christians believe death is a doorway. It's a doorway that leads to a new beginning. Just as Peter Pan said, death will be the greatest adventure of all. So doors can cause apprehension, but face them we must, because doors are a part of life. So I wanted to close the series this morning, thinking about that metaphor and considering what does it mean to face doors with faith. And this is where the outline comes in handy. You'll notice on the outline, there are five perspectives on open doors I'm going to share with you in a moment. And the only reason I left some blanks to fill in is to keep you awake so that you'll stay tuned in and follow along. But here's what I want you to do. As you listen to these five, when we get to the fifth one, I want you to star the perspective of a door that speaks to you the most right now. At any given time, we are all probably either facing a door or we have recently gone through a door and we're reflecting on that choice. And I want you to star the one that speaks to you the most, and at the end of the message, I'll talk to you about what we might do with that perspective that we starred. So let's begin with the first perspective. Some doors have to be closed in order for new ones to open. Some doors have to be closed first for new ones to open. The scripture lesson this morning comes from the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. We heard it. I have set before you an open door. But the majority of translations say it just a little bit differently. I have opened a door for you. Open door versus opened door. Now that may seem like a trivial difference, but there is an important distinction there. An open door may have always been open. It may always be that way. But an opened door means it was at one point closed and somebody opened it. That's how some open doors come to us in life, because other doors closed. And closed doors are never fun, especially when we didn't close them. When other people close them, they're never fun. Somebody else ended the relationship. An employer said, it's time we're going to go in a new direction. The economy tanks and opportunities in your life come to an end. Those are never fun. But I believe God understands that some doors in our life have to be shut before we'll be open to new and even better doors. Martin Luther King Jr., when he finished seminary at Boston University, was ready for his first pastoral assignment. He narrowed his doors to two, a church in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. He wanted to go to the church in Chattanooga because it was a little more prestigious, and I'm sure Dr. King thought, that's going to be the better place to launch my career. But that door got closed. The church did not choose him. They said, we think you're just a little too young yet. So he went to Montgomery, Alabama, and within a few months of starting his ministry there, Rosa Parks refused to sit in the back of a city bus and was arrested and put in jail. And that evening, the black clergy in Montgomery had a meeting, and they talked about what their response would be, and they elected a leader, and they chose the newest member of their fellowship, and that's how Martin Luther King Jr. became a leader of the civil rights movement, because of a closed door. Now, is that an important perspective for anybody today? Have you gone through a closed door recently? Anybody watching online gone through a closed door? And it's hard for you to get beyond the closed door because you weren't ready for it to close. You are waiting and you are praying for God to open that door back up, and it's not happening. And maybe it's time to elevate to God's viewpoint and perspective and trust that maybe God's got something even better in mind for you, and to look at life right now through God's lens. Well, let's consider another perspective. Some doors open before we are ready. They open before we are ready. And therefore, don't wait for ready. Moses wasn't ready when God came along and said, I want you to tell Pharaoh to set my people free. Moses tried to come up with every excuse in the book not to. I'm not ready. But when he did, God made him the great deliverer. Isaiah said when God called him to speak on God's behalf, I'm a man of unclean lips. I'm not worthy. And when God anointed him, he became a prophet. Jeremiah said, I'm too young. But he went, and God used him to bring faith to a downtrodden nation. Esther said to her cousin Mordecai, who am I to go speak to the king? But when she did, God used her obedience to set free her people. Peter, when he first met Jesus, said, depart from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. But God used him to become the rock, the foundation of the church. I mean, I could go on and on. Stories in the scripture of people not ready for what God called them to. And I would guess that for most of us, when God opens a door in our lives, if we wait until we're ready, we'll never walk through it. In this passage from Revelation, right after speaking to the church of Philadelphia, saying, I have opened for you a door, notice what it says next. I know you have little strength. God says, I know you don't feel adequate. That is not what you need to rely on. Your feeling of adequacy is not going to make you successful on the other side of the door. It's going to be what I do with you and I do through you. In fact, if you've ever wrestled with an opportunity and you go, I don't know, is this God opening the door? Here's perhaps one way to tell if what that door is calling you to is bigger than what you feel capable of doing. That's usually a sign that God is in it. When you look at it and go, I don't even know why I feel nudged. I can't do that. Often that's where God is involved. You know, if all we do in life is what we're good at, we will never discover our potential. And most certainly, we'll never require a lot of faith. But a God-opened door is one in which we're typically going to feel inadequate, but we discover God's help to do it along the way. Is that a helpful message to anybody today? Are you wrestling with something opening up in your life, but it scares you to death? What's important to know is that if God is in this, your ability to handle it really has not much to do with your readiness. It has to do with a God who will walk with you through it. Well, a third perspective on doors. We have to overcome fear of the wrong door. Fear of the wrong door. Now, I think this is probably where most of us fall into consternation when it comes to open doors, because we fear choosing wrongly. You know the game show, Let's Make a Deal? They have the three doors in front of a contestant. And behind one of the doors, you know, the contestants always know there's a great prize behind one of them. There's a new car. And behind the other doors are things like a new washing machine. Nobody wants a washing machine. You want the car. And so when it comes time to choose, if you've ever watched the show, people just, they start getting nervous, wringing their hands. They're not sure what to do. And then, you know, they're kind of in turmoil, because they don't want to choose the wrong door. There's only one door with the grand prize. And then the crowd gets into it. And the people sitting in the studio audience all know the right answer, right? And they all start yelling different numbers at the person. It makes it worse. And what they do is they don't make a decision. Because once you make a decision, you can't go back. You're going to get what you get. And you know what's funny about this? You could win a brand new washing machine and feel like a loser. That's what doors do to us. Doors can trap us into thinking there's only one correct one that's going to give us the very best that life has to offer. So we better be careful, because if we don't choose it, we won't get life's best. My last semester in college, I went through a period of consternation trying to choose a seminary. I applied to a lot of schools and narrowed my options to three doors: Yale, Duke, Emory. I heard from Yale. They offered me a scholarship, 50% tuition. Now, one thing I need to admit to you and confess really is I've always wrestled with inferiority when it comes to academia. You know, I've always felt like I'm just not as smart as other people. And I thought, oh boy, if I can have a Yale degree on my wall, I'm going to feel smart. Then I learned that 50% of Yale's tuition was still more than 100% of Emory or Duke's. Now, for those of you who know me, know that when it comes to finances, I can be a little bit tight. So, ego goes to a certain point, and then you say, no, that ego need is too expensive. So I was narrowed down to two doors, which you would think means it got easier, and it didn't. I could not decide. I was staying up at night. I couldn't sleep. I had knots in my stomach. I got past the deadline when I need to let the schools know. They were calling me going, we are about to fix our number of accepted students. What is your choice? I couldn't make up my mind. I was immobilized by fear of the wrong door. I thought that my whole career resided on this decision. If I don't go to the right seminary, well, my career won't be as good as it would have if I went through the other door. And I would pray, God, what do you want me to do? What's the right one, God? Which one? What is it, God? Crickets. Nothing. Until God answered. I had a dream one night. And for one night, I was able to sleep. And in my dream, God spoke to me. And God said something like this. Rob, I hang out as much in Durham as I hang out in Atlanta. And I woke up. Now, that probably means absolutely nothing to you. But it liberated me. Because that was God's way of saying, I'm going to be in both places. There's no wrong decision. I will help you, and better yet, I put a brain in your head. You might not be proud of it. You might not think it's all that smart, but I'm the one who gave it to you. I know what you're capable of doing. So quit waiting for me to write the words in the sky. Just make up your mind. And I went back to my criteria that I had. I thought about the experiences I was looking for, and I thought, you know, I want a different experience. I can go to Duke and be in North Carolina, and I'm going to have North Carolina for the rest of my career. I didn't know I was going to Indiana at the time. But anyway, I knew the right decision. Go somewhere that's going to give me a different experience. And I knew that Emory would all. And finally, I just felt free to choose it. I did. And first day on campus, I learned that my advisor was someone, to my embarrassment, I'd never heard of, Dr. Fred Craddock. The premier preacher in the English language at that time. And my relationship with Dr. Craddock changed my life. Is that a message anybody needs to hear today? Quit waiting. Quit waiting for God to write the answer right before you. God's going to be with you no matter what door you choose. Once you have that peace, then maybe you can trust that God will be in the decision-making process that you have. Let's think about a fourth observation. God opens doors that lead to significance rather than satisfaction. Have you ever noticed that God never mentioned to Mary anything about a cross when God asked Mary to have a baby who would be the Savior of the world? Did you ever notice that Jesus did not tell Paul anything about shipwrecks and beatings and being put on trial when he called Paul to be an apostle? Have you ever noticed God did not explain to Abraham the times when he's going to feel insecure and forgotten by God when he said to him, go to the place I will show you? You just kind of figure, if God showed people everything that it would mean to walk through that door on the front end, they would never take the first step. And I wonder if many of us are like that. In fact, for everyone, when God is involved in opening a door, God says to us what God said to Abraham. Go to the place I will show you. Go, I will show. Not, here's where it's going to end up one day. Not, here's what's going to happen to you after you go through this door. It's just simply, go, and then I will show you where it leads to. A God-opened door is about a direction, not a destination. It's about trusting that God is the one leading, and we don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen. And the way that we face that door is probably going to be vastly improved if we go looking for the significance that it offers, for the value that it puts in our lives, for the sense of purpose and meaning we have. But if we go looking for satisfaction, what is going to be the door that gives me the greatest comfort and makes my life easier? We will probably be very frustrated with that path and constantly second-guess our decision. One of the most misunderstood statements of Jesus in the Gospels comes from Matthew chapter 11. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. John Ortberg reminds us that a yoke was a heavy wooden mantle put on the shoulders of oxen to keep them working in tandem. But he also points out that it was a metaphor in Jesus' day of a teacher's way of life. What Jesus was saying to followers is, take my yoke upon you. Take my way of life upon your life. Take the way I live and appropriate it into your living. Not because it's comfortable, not because it's easy the way we might think of it, but because he'll give us the help we need to bear it. Ortberg says, easy doesn't describe my problems. It describes the strength from beyond myself with which I can carry my problems. Is that a helpful thought for you today? Are you avoiding a door because it's going to be challenging? Just ask yourself, where might I experience more of God? Staying where I am or going through that door? Okay, one last observation on doors, and really this should have been number one. I kind of tricked you. I put it at the end, but really it is the understanding of doors that falls, all of the other four observations fall underneath this one. Saved it till the end because it's the one I want you to hold on to. The most important thing to know about doors that God opens is that God opens doors that make our lives useful. That's what God is looking for the most. What is the door in which our lives can be made useful? Now, we face a lot of doors in life. We face a lot of choices, a lot of decisions, but not all of them are God-created. They're just life-created. They're opportunities, decisions we make, and God is glad to be a part of it. God cares about them. It doesn't mean that God is setting these things up, but be careful when you bring God into all of your decisions. Because rather than being concerned about our comfort, God's concerned about our usefulness. You know, have you ever said, God, I need to know if this is the person you want me to marry. I need to know if this is who you want me to get married to for the rest of my life. God, I need to know, is this the job I should have? God, I need to know, do you want me to buy this house? I mean, I've heard people say this and a lot of other things. God, do you want me to do this? And just ask yourself, what would it take to answer that question for you? What would you have to experience to know that the decision you made was the right one that God wanted? Would it be that the person you married makes your life happy all the time? Would it be that the job you take is rewarding and fulfilling every day? Would it be that the house you buy never has a problem, not even a leaky faucet? If you do, your faith is probably going to be in a lot of trouble. Your faith is going to be on shaky ground because every obstacle in life is going to make you question your faith. Have you ever said, God, I thought you were in this. I thought this was the choice that you intended for me to make. I felt so convicted that that's it. But if you bring God into it, just know that God's not saying, I want you to take the one that's going to be the easiest life for you. But rather, what is the door where I can be useful? God, how can you use me in this door? What a different way of approaching. Because God wants us to live useful lives. Frederick Buechner has a quote I really like. To journey for the sake of saving our own lives is little by little to cease to live in any sense that really matters, even to ourselves. Because it is only by journeying for the world's sake, even when the world bores and sickens and scares you half to death, that little by little we start to come alive. One of the things that makes me so proud to be a pastor here at St. Luke's is to see people in our church who live useful lives all the time, constantly offering their lives to say, God, how can you use me? And I'm watching that right now with our Freedom School. Freedom School helping children for whom they could easily fall behind during the summer and help keep them ready when the new school year begins, because we believe that education is an important door in the lives of young people. And so I'm watching our volunteers who are saying, I just want my life to be useful. And we've got volunteers from teenagers to folks in their 80s saying, I just want to be useful. It is a cool thing to see. Coming up this month, we are celebrating two people on our church staff who are retiring. One is Mary Hock, who retires at the end of July after 15 years. I can't believe, she doesn't even look old enough to be retired. Mary will not give me her birth certificate, so I can confirm that she is indeed of retirement age. But that's going to be a big retirement. And then next week is the retirement of Betty Brandt. Betty has been on the staff of St. Luke's for 23 years, serving in different capacities, most recently the director of our Community for Contemplation and Justice work. I asked Betty if she would mind just speaking for a few moments this morning about what it's meant to seek in her life being useful to God. Betty, thanks for sharing.
It is on. Thank you, Rob. So when Rob asked me to remember when God first opened the door for me to serve others, my mind sort of went blank because it was so long ago that I don't really have that memory. But then I thought immediately of my years as a marriage and family therapist, and some of you may not even know that I had a long career as a therapist. And those were years of service to walk with folks when they were in a difficult time in their life. And what an honor it was for me to be with them as they acknowledged whatever the pain was and moved through those feelings to a place of healing. And I do remember well my first mission trip with St. Luke's, and I fell in love with habitat projects. And there's probably some people out there that have been with me on a project or two. So I learned how to put up siding, I learned how to put down flooring, and eventually I was the cook for habitat teams. Over the years, I went on about 35 mission trips to South Dakota, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, Jamaica, and Honduras. And what a blessing to work alongside others providing housing for those who want a home, just like all the rest of us do. Of course, the door that God opened that has led me here today was in 2000 when Kent Millard offered me the job of directing the Spiritual Life Center. That was the name that was the original name of the Community for Contemplation and Justice. I knew from the very beginning that the best way for me to serve in that capacity was to surround myself with smart, hardworking, talented visionaries. And that's what I did. And I made it possible for those people to fulfill their dreams. Some people think I am a visionary, but I'm not. I'm just a really good implementer. Bring me your dream, and I can help you make it happen. God kept opening doors for me and my volunteers, and we walked through so many of them. We made creation care, interfaith relationships, racial justice, tenants advocacy, ending gun violence, pride, labyrinth walking, mindfulness, Stations of the Cross, Taze, the art gallery, and many more. All those doors, all those ways to serve you and the larger community. And along the way, I have been richly blessed, and I have fallen in love with all of you over and over again. I'm not sure what the future will hold for me, but I am sure that God will open more doors and that I will be blessed to walk through them into new ways to serve. My advice for you is that if you want a meaningful life, walk through the doors that God opens for you. Thank you.
So if you want to join in celebrating Betty Brandt's ministry and her work here among us, to thank her, I invite you to an event on a week from this coming Saturday, July 8th, from 3 to 5 o'clock in Great Hall. We're going to have a celebration of Betty. There's going to be a program that starts at 4 o'clock that day. So everyone is invited, and hope you can make it that day. All right, which one did you star? Was it door number one, door number two, three, four, five? Which one stood out to you based on what you're going through in your life right now? If you did, here's what I want you to do. Later today, maybe within the next few days, at a quiet time, take the starred statement, that perspective, and answer the question, why? And write that down. Maybe it's just a few sentences, but write down, why does this stand out to me right now? Then after you write it down, I want you to turn that into a prayer. Turn that perspective and what you wrote into a prayer. Maybe that prayer would begin, Dear God, help me to be confident that you are with me in this door I'm going through. Dear God, help me to find those doors that make my life useful to you. Dear God, help me to see you and to trust that you're at work in this. Whatever that prayer is. And then I want you to pray it regularly and then do this second thing. Write down in a journal over a few weeks how you experience God moving in response to your prayer. As you are praying this prayer, write down ways you experience God's activity, great or small. It might feel very tiny. But the collection of tiny things will lead you to big discoveries where you are going, oh my gosh, look at what God's doing. Why is this important? Because sometimes we make decisions in our lives a lot more complicated than they need to be. We wait for God to give us crystal clear evidence. And the reason God might not give that to us is because of what can go on inside of us. When we think about going through doors, when we engage ourselves in seeking God's wisdom in constant prayer and reflection, the discoveries we find with God become more important than even the doors themselves. So I hope that you'll do that. And I hope you'll think about how God is at work in your life now and already out in front of you and any of the places where God would lead.